Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Roan. The Cleveland Cavaliers were able to make it a little closer at the end, but ultimately dropped the steamer in Milwaukee. But it's all good. First game back for Dellavedova since the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead. And to help talk about everything is not Carter Rodriguez, because he is still hungover from Vegas. Instead, we got good friend of the pod, Jeff Nomina. Jeff, how's it going, buddy?
It's going well. I'm glad that we're saving the first Delly win till a home game. I think I'm smart of the team to throw this one.
Jeff, I'm crediting Delly for the Washington win, because that was officially four straight wins with him on the roster dating back to 2016.
Oh, there's no question that the team just had such a big boost from getting a talent like that on the team that they just had to go all out.
Right, and they probably lost tonight because Giannis wasn't in the lineup. They're a team that really plays to the level of their competition. So this Bucks squad without Giannis, it just didn't do it for them. But ultimately not the greatest game. Tristan Thompson gets hurt, just the absolute last thing you'd want to see. Both Jetty Osman and Colin Sexton kind of had a rough night. And I take full responsibility for Sexton having a rough night, because by booking you, it almost guaranteed that Sexton was going to have a tough game, because the universe doesn't want me to take victory laps on you.
So I don't necessarily want to be the anti-Sexton guy, because like there's parts of his game that I enjoy and he seems like a good kid, but it's kind of going that route. And I feel like I just got to like steer into the curve a little bit. Like I feel like I really need to own this.
And you just have make to lean it my into thing. It.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, it's not exactly like I was a Sexton optimist. I mean, I was not happy at all with the pick. So far this season, the thing that's really impressed me is just how quickly his game has adjusted, especially with Kevin Love not being in the lineup. I really thought that Kevin Love's presence was going to be essential to him playing well. And outside of a few rough games, we've just seen a consistent growth from him. And at the very least, we know that he's probably going to be able to be a scorer in the NBA.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that he has a long NBA career ahead of him. The thing I was thinking earlier today is, after living through guys like Deion Waiters and, you know, some of those more chucker kind of guys, I don't think he's going to be bad. Like, I don't watch him and think he has all these tendencies that he's going to be a bad player. I'm just waiting to see some more pops of the stuff that makes him a good player, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I mean, the fact that he's kind of established himself as a scorer, one of the main things that I needed to see in order to be in on him was the jump shot. And I think it's going to become more consistent as he gains strength, but it's way ahead of where I think any of us really expected. Even Sexton Optimus, I don't think they expected him to shoot this well this early on. And the fact that we are seeing him kind of force the issue less, he's not creating for guys necessarily at a high rate yet, but he's not turning the ball over the same way that he did early in the season. And to me, that's a positive growth. I don't need him to be a 10 assist guy, but I just want to at least see him not be a ball stopper. That's the next step in his evolution to me.
Yeah, for sure. A guy who can not necessarily set up a ton of open looks, but at least do the drive and kick thing. And at least, you know, as we hopefully find a shooter someday or when Kevin Love comes back, that he can at least find those open looks as he kind of breaks down the defense. Cause you know, that's going to be his important skill. It's just always being the guy who can break down the defense. Mm-hmm. But I agree, his jump shot's been great. And if that was supposed to be his weakness coming in, you know, that's certainly a good sign. It was pretty frightening drafting a short guy who couldn't really shoot in today's NBA. So if the jump shot is really this far ahead, it makes me feel quite a bit better about where he's going to be.
No, I mean that's ultimately my nightmare. I can make excuses for guys that don't pass the ball. I still will make fun of any nerd that wanted Kyrie to pass more to guys that aren't as good at scoring it as he is. Now that he's at least showing a jump shot, that's something that I can get behind, because while I'd like to see him get to the rim a little more and change up his approach when he actually gets to the rim so he isn't blocked as much, having some sort of a shot is going to open things up for him. And if you're projecting way too far into the future looking way further ahead than you should be, when his athleticism declines, that jump shot's going to be essential for him to remain effective.
three or four rings from now, when that jump, when he doesn't have the athleticism anymore.
Right, right. When when RJ Barrett and Jetty Osman are fighting for finals MVPs and Paul being their Kyrie, I think at that point we might want to worry about how his game is going to age. But that might not be an issue. But we kind of buried the lead here. Delly is back on the Cavs in one of the kind of more predictable moves in terms of fit. Like, I was advocating for JR for Delly earlier on. I thought that was going to be a move that would kind of make sense for both teams. But it ended up being a much bigger return than I expected, with John Henson coming over, Delly, a first-round pick that in all likelihood isn't converting until 2022 at the earliest, and a second. It was just a surprising return to me. What were kind of some of your thoughts when that trade first came down?
It was a fun trade too, because it kept breaking in little pieces and parts.
Right. So. I like that Woj led with Delly. Like,
oh yeah.
The Cleveland Cavaliers had traded for Matthew Dellavedova. John Henson's in it. Picks are in it. I was like, holy crap. I was happy when it was just Henson at that point.
And I do enjoy the people who tried to like tell Cavs fans that Dellavedova isn't actually good. Like, of course we know that. Let us have fun. Like, we don't need him to like do anything great. It's just we want to have stupid little memories of 2016. Like, we want to see lineups where it's Delly, and maybe we need to bring JR back for one game so we can have Delly and JR and like play Kevin Love at small forward, and then put Tristan and Channing Frye all out there, so we can just get the whole all the remnants back from 2016 and get them on the court at one time.
Yeah, I mean, the last time that we saw Delly play for this team, we benched him for Mo Williams so that we could win a championship. Like, I think
the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, 2009 me was ecstatic to see Mo Williams in there, but yeah, we know Delly isn't that good.
All-star Mo Williams. All-star Mo Williams.
Former all-star Mo Williams. Former 52-point scorer Mo Williams. I mean, and if we know anything, it's scoring 50-plus in Minnesota means that you are an all-star and an MVP candidate, according to Derrick Rose stands.
I still can't believe that Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade were on this team a year ago at this point.
It's baffling to me. Derrick Rose, Dwayne Wade, Jay Crowder, it was so much of what I didn't want on this team. And plus Isaiah Thomas, I mean, as beloved as he is amongst Cavs circles, a controversial opinion. I wasn't a big fan of him.
Yeah, not to rehash too much of last season, because it wasn't the most fun of seasons, but did anybody go from like kind of a fan favorite to hate it as quickly as he did? Remember, he was on the sidelines and he was puffing on his chest and giving guys chest bumps coming off. And then as soon as he played like two games, it was just over. He even looked good in the first game. And then after that, it was just over. And we just were all like, nope, this doesn't work. Stop it right now.
I still want to take a victory lap, because in September I had written that they should trade Isaiah Thomas and a first round pick for either George Hill or Patrick Beverley. So I was out on him. Then him on the sideline kind of made me feel like, okay, maybe I'll give him a shot. But no, I was done with that guy fairly quickly.
I was at the game. I was at his first game when he came back and he scored like 19 points or just something. Like, he had a really nice game, and I was all in. I was all in after that game.
Speaking of players that are probably more valuable as a trade asset than anything they're going to do on the court, John Henson. I found the Cavs getting him to be really, really interesting, because that's a guy that if I had to guess, I really don't think that he's going to play a single game for the Cavs. With his wrist surgery, the hope for that the Bucks had was that he would be able to return shortly before the playoffs, if not for the playoffs. So that likely means that he's not going to see any game action before the trade deadline. And with him only making like $9 million a year, and with the added range he's shown this season, I just think that the teams are going to say, you know what, that's cheap enough. Screw it. We'll take a gamble. We'll give up something. Because once again, the Cavs are one of the few teams that's actually a buyer at this point this year. And I really do think that with Alec Burks, John Henson, even Rodney Hood to some degree, they have some guys that might actually have value for teams that are looking to add cheap help at the deadline.
Yeah, we have a lot of guys. Like, I can't imagine a contender won't chase Rodney Hood. Not that he's some prize, but a guy who can shoot and has a little bit of length at that contract.
I mean, yeah, Houston on an should be all over
something
deal.
Like that.
Yeah.
Right. Houston, LA, like teams that just don't have a ton of depth of shooting should just be all over these guys. And I don't think we're going to get a big haul for any of them, but even if we can replenish a bunch of second round picks, it's just something to have moving forward. Just something to sweeten the pot as we're trying to make other deals.
No, absolutely. And ultimately, when you look at what we were expecting to get for George Hill, you got 2 second rounds already. So if you get some additional picks in exchange for John Henson, and then you have that first round pick, which to me, now we're invested in Giannis staying, which is a scary proposition, because I thought I was done with small forwards that are possibly going to leave. But apparently I'm not done with that yet. But
if we are going to be sweating that decision, we're going to be the biggest Bucks fans.
We have back-to-back decisions we have to worry about here involving that pick, because not only do we have to worry about Giannis staying, we have to wonder whether or not that's going to be the first year of the double draft. Because if that ends up being the draft where there are high school kids that are able to go one and done, and all of a sudden the pool doubles, that could still be valuable, even if that pick's in the 20s. I mean, you're still probably not getting one of the better prospects in that draft, but it's a hell of a lot more valuable than it would be in a traditional year.
Listen, we need anything. we don't really have much of anything. It's actually fairly depressing. It's when, you know, kind of those Markelle Fultz debates were going on and people worried about it. We don't want to hurt this development, hurt that. It's like, we don't have anybody who's so important to develop right now that that we should worry about anything. Like, any talent we can get is fine. So, but I think we should lean into this all the way. And if the Bucks need anything else, just give it to them. Like sweeten the pot, make Giannis as happy as possible. Like, Rodney Hood, that, we should just throw him into that deal. We should just be taking on anything and making Giannis as happy as we can over there.
There's two teams I want to make happy right now. There's the Sacramento Kings, because I don't want the Celtics to get a high lottery pick. And there's the Milwaukee Bucks, because I want anything to make Giannis happy. So
I'm happy that no matter how bad the Cavs are, my hatred for the Celtics hasn't subsided at all. Like, the Warriors, I'm kind of overhating them. Like, I'm just worn out from that. But the Celtics, I haven't given up even a tiny bit. Like, the Raptors, I don't really care about the Raptors. But the Celtics, I will hate watch them anytime that I can.
I have important questions for you. How much hurt do you still have for what Kyrie did forcing a trade?
At this point, it feels like it was all just going to blow up. At this, how far in advance do you think the Cavs knew that LeBron was going to go to LA?
Well, I'm going to go with what David Griffin, Jason Lloyd, and some other people have said, which a lot of people in the front office thought he was leaving for LA about a month after the championship. That they felt that was the last contract that he was going to sign with the team. I don't necessarily want to rehash those wounds. I was going to ask, if there's any lingering hurt, how much would Kyrie walking away from Boston this summer and going to the Knicks, what would that do? Would he jump up your Cavs all-time rankings? Would that heal all wounds? Because to me, that's not as big as the shot, but that's like my second favorite shot that he ever hit.
You know how Delly had to tape a 1 on his jersey so it said 18 instead of 8 when he came back? we're doing that to Sexton for every game for the rest of the year.
To his actual jersey, we're going to duct tape a 1. He's going to be 12.
That way we can instantly retire Kyrie's number for sabotaging the hell out of Danny. Danny knew, and it would be amazing.
It'd be pretty hysterical for Boston to kind of come out empty-handed there after only one playoff run, because he didn't play last year. And then if Colin Sexton ends up panning out, we can all of a sudden do the hindsight thing that is absolutely awful, but also an easy source of joke. So that along with the Giannis staying, is pretty high on my list of hopes and dreams for the upcoming NBA.
Yeah, I think these are totally healthy and normal things for a sports fan to be worried about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to be fair, right now we're in the rebuilding stage, so any jokes, like, we're insulated. Everything is bad for us. We know we suck. So it's not really going to hurt when teams come at us. But anything we can launch at other fan bases, especially ones like Boston, That's a lot of fun. Even Delly, we can get excited about Delly coming to the team, even though he's not good, because it annoys people so much that we like him as much as we do.
Oh, that, yeah.
That we can just run with it. We can ride that wave.
Yeah, that's the great thing about sports is you can either be so good you're invincible or so bad you're invincible. And I think we're so bad that we're invincible because there's not even anything you can say that's new or different that surprises us.
No.
And I tweeted this the other day and people seem to love it, but has there ever been a team that so thoroughly got their ass kicked by another team like the Cavs did with the Warriors, but still completely came out ahead of the trash-talking game?
Yeah, well, I mean – They just don't have a lot of creative fans. Like, as much as I love Sam and Andy, and they do have some bangers, I mean, at the same time, like, the jokes just aren't that good, and they don't sting as much. Like, we are still fully in that fan base's heads, and it really does crack me up.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's just exceptional. But moving on from that, We do have some news. Mark Stein reporting that the Houston Rockets have interest in Jarrett Smith and kind of had some exploratory talks. This is something that I'm not exactly surprised that this is coming down this way. Houston was always the team that kind of made the most sense. And to me, like, I just think we're probably about a week or two away from, like, Brandon Knight and a protect first round pick for JR. Like, that just always has felt like the logical conclusion here. And I don't know if that pick is ever going to convert, but depending on what the protections are, I'm pretty okay with it. I mean, I'm not expecting to get a whole lot for JR. And in my opinion, we've already kind of been ahead of the game, both with the Kyle Korver trade and the George Hill trade. I think they've gotten more than the amount of assets that I expected. So I'm okay with taking a little bit of L just to get JR to a different situation.
And it's funny that Houston just went through the Carmelo thing and now it's going to take on JR, like the kind of washed up, somewhat disgruntled player that they're going to somehow get something out of. And I love JR. I don't mean this as negative JR, but like, he's probably not helping anybody at this point.
So no, for them, no, but he's exactly what they need, because they need somebody that's going to take the blame for the fact that James Harden stopped caring after he got an MVP, and Chris Paul stopped caring after he got that contract.
But it'd be the perfect situation. I'll be honest. I thought we were going to have to end up buying out a lot of these kind of high-priced guys, Korver, Hill, JR. Like, I just assumed that we'd get one or two trades for some seconds, and most of it would be buyout. So if we could steal a first rounder or something, even if it's heavily protected, that's a hell of an offseason, or a hell of a trade season so far. It's the offseason.
No,
it's the whole season of offseason.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Our season is the lottery and the draft and
yes,
the free agency. This is the offseason. That was a Freudian slip. You know exactly what you're talking about, Jeff, and that's why I brought you
up. We're not even going to have cap space or anything. That's, I guess, my only wonder is how many more of these deals we can do where we take on long-term money, because we have, you know, some money on the books, and it's going to be interesting how much we can take on here.
I'm perfectly fine with lighting Dan Gilbert's money on fire. And I think a lot of what future money we have, and this is an obvious statement, and I realize that as I'm setting it up, but depending on what happens at the deadline, like, I really think that those are the two times of this year that I'm really curious about, is both the deadline and then obviously the lottery, because so much of our future really comes down to just really shitty odds. Like, even if you end up with the worst record, it's still shitty odds. But also the deadline, because I do feel like we said earlier, there's interesting pieces here. There's money that could long-term money that could potentially be sent to a contender or a different team. We could take on a lot of long-term money. And then as much as I think the Cavs are going to hold on to Kevin Love and that's the plan, that is still a question. Like, we aren't going to know what's happening until that deadline passes.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. Hill's gone, and he was a huge contract to give out. And if JR goes, because there are teams like Memphis with Parsons or Charlotte with Batum or some of their other deals that are probably looking to get out from quite a bit of money. And I wonder if there's an opportunity there to get a real, you know, decent asset from one of those teams if we're willing to take on a ton of money down the road.
Yeah.
So you wonder what those conversations were, as we're kind of sending out these contracts for smaller assets if there was an opportunity or is an opportunity for a big splash there. But I will be interested to see, like you said, Henson could be moved, JR could be moved. There's still a lot of money that we have on the books that could be sent out to bring in some decent assets. And Burks could help a team. Like, Alec Burks is a guy who could help a team. Henson might be able to help a team if he's healthy at all. So we also have some players.
Yeah, it's funny because at least in comparison to Rodney Hood, I would much rather have Alec Burks. Like, that's he's still relatively young. I think he's about 27 years old. So he doesn't necessarily fit the Cavs timeline, but that's a guy that if there's nothing worthwhile available, like if you can't even get a somewhat decent return at the deadline, it wouldn't be the end of the world to me for him to just kind of ride out the rest of the season. I think that he's somebody that would help Sexton playing alongside him with his spacing and his kind of ability to move the ball and at least be a willing passer. Like, in comparison to Rodney Hood, who is a ball stopper almost every time he gets it, just completely checks out of some games. Like, at least with Burks, you know, even if the shooting is inconsistent, his effort and what he brings to the table in every other aspect of his game is going to be consistent. So out of the two Utah wings, I think I'd rather keep Burks long-term if it's going to be either of them.
Oh yeah, I agree. And I think he probably is a kind of a better guy to have around the locker room and stuff. He seems like he really has a little bit of an edge and really, you know, wants to win and wants to be good. And we kind of have a weird roster where, you know, it's kind of some older guys who knew they were on their way out or Rodney Hood and just don't really show a whole lot of care about things. So
Rodney Hood might be on his way out from quarter to quarter. You never know when he's going to decide, no, tonight's not my night.
What's been a worse Cavalier experience, Jay Crowder or Rodney Hood?
That's interesting. I think Jay Crowder started with an unfair kind of starting point with me just because I had years of listening to, well, RPM says that Jay Crowder is actually a better player than Kevin Love and they should swap them straight up. Who cares that he's only had one season where he shot well from three and he's basically been a Mon Shumpert every other year. But Jay Crowder also kind of has a better excuse in that he was being basically neglected and made to feel unwelcome by LeBron. Obviously, he had the tragedy with his mom passing the day of the trade. So there was a lot of circumstance to that. The Rodney Hood experience has just been so damn disappointing. I mean, I would never go back and listen to the podcast after the trades last year. but with Kevin Love out, I do know that I was anticipating Rodney Hood to be our second leading scorer behind LeBron. And let's just say that never came to fruition.
Yeah, I always wondered if Jay Crowder was the kind of guy who did the little things and that's what made him valuable. But that the Cavaliers team that he came into just didn't do the little things. When nobody's trying to do the little things, those don't become, like, setting good screens and moving up the ball just are not all that important for a team that literally never cares about those things. So I think he was somewhat set up to fail. But yeah, I remember listening to your pod talking about who the highest scorers would be and like thinking guys were crazy for not talking about Rodney Hood more. So I'm with you that it's just been so disappointing to watch him just kind of float in and out of games. And like, I want to know what was happening in Utah that they had him scoring like 16 or 17 a game. Cause he just,
you mean Boston?
Oh, I'm sorry. I switched to Rodney Hood. What, how they got Hood?
Oh yeah. 16 yes, or 17 yes, a game. Yes. I think Jay Crowder also made me even more annoyed by him when he went to Utah and just immediately started talking shit. Like I needed an offensive system in order to get going. And you look at the last couple of years, so he shot about 42% and 43% from three with the Cavs. With the Jazz so far, he is averaging 39% shooting from the floor and 31% from three. So he's shooting even worse from Utah. So that offensive system has done him a lot of good, obviously.
There's nothing people love more than talking about NBA offensive systems and how just running a spread pick and roll is terrible. No matter how much the Cavs dominated with that for 4 years, it just people refuse to accept it in any way.
Yeah, and then you get teams that, oh, they run such a beautiful offense. They're maximizing all these role players like Boston over the last few years. And then Boston just had one of their best games with everybody out of the lineup because Brad Stevens is better with scrappy tryhard guys.
And I'm so fascinated by that whole thing.
Oh man, he's going to be an interesting case study, that's for sure. And how the blame gets divided up in Boston is going to be really, really interesting because, man, that situation, there is a lot of talent there, but there's also egos and guys that are young and probably want bigger roles than they have. So that's going to be fascinating to me.
I feel like I spend a lot of time wanting to just shoot off like the hottest of takes about Boston, but I know that they're going to turn it around at some point, and somebody's just going to be able to retweet those. Like Snotty's just going to be retweeting those for a week straight, and so I have to like hold them in.
But man,
I just want so many bad things to happen.
I always forget that Snotty's part of Celtics Twitter. the man does love his takes though, and we got to get him on. Actually, it's surprising to me that we haven't had Stani on yet.
Oh man, that would be good.
Yeah, he's always good for a take or two. What is your opinion? Because I was already spreading my propaganda earlier on John Henson not playing a game and the team kind of sticking with him or sticking with Tristan and Nance over him. Like my take on this is I do think right now I'd like to keep Tristan Thompson because you look at how he's playing this season, obviously prior to tonight's injury, but he's been the leader on and off the floor. Like he's really stepped up in a big way, and he has been someone that's fit so well alongside Kevin Love, and Larry Nance has played a lot better too lately. I do think that his kind of ideal role is as the third big off the bench. And I just think the gap in talent between John Henson and Larry Nance is probably smaller than the perceived trade value. Like I think John Henson's going to fetch a lot more, partly due to his contract, partly due to he's just someone that's always kind of been thought highly of around the league. And you never see a lot of criticism of him. But what's kind of your take? If you're Kobe Altman, what would your direction be?
I struggle with the Tristan thing because he's having a monster season. He is clearly the most mature guy in that locker room and the most vocal, like the most willing to take on that role. I really like Kevin Love. I don't know if he's that guy or not.
No, he at the very least, he hasn't traditionally been that guy.
Right, right. So, you know, I feel like he's important and you kind of need him. But he kind of has a game like completely built for the playoffs and he would help a whole bunch of contenders right now. And would you rather watch Tristan do this for us or go shut down Al Horford again in the playoffs? Or, you know,
I mean, if he's getting moved, I want to see him go to Toronto. Cause I just think that would be a very interesting fit. And obviously he'd have a prime opportunity to shut down Al Horford. And that would make me really happy. But part of why I want to hang on to Tristan is he does still have a very significant contract. And because we haven't, or at least he hasn't shown in the last couple of years that he can do this on a winning team. And that's the stupidest narrative, but it's one that people cling to. And obviously it's been pretty much dependent on his health. And he was essential to the Cavs getting to the finals last year. But just his issues with health, the amount of dollars that he's going to be paid over the next couple of years here, I just don't think that there's going to be a market for him. And I'm not comfortable unloading him unless it's actually for something in return, because I think what he can bring to the locker room is valuable. And I think it can assist in preventing things from getting as ugly within the locker room as they were post-decision.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's a lot like the trading Kevin Love discussion where, yeah, I'm sure somebody would take him, but are you going to get anything back that's going to offset what you're losing in terms of just having some sort of talent and culture and history on your roster? You know, is it worth losing that for a late first rounder or something like that? And I've kind of come out in the same place as you, where it's just probably not worth it. You're just really not going to end up in that much of a better spot. Sure, the Cavs need to be collecting assets, but yeah, how many late first rounders can they really roster?
Yeah. And how much do you trust the Cavs to draft players that are going to matter with those late first round picks?
Where are we with Kobe Altman? Do we like Kobe Altman? Is he good?
I think he has earned the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I tweeted this after the George Hill trade, but I kind of have like trade PTSD, because after every single move that Kobe Altman has made, NBA Twitter has loved it. They love the Kyrie trade. Oh, the Cavs might even be better now with Isaiah Thomas and all these players that fit their system. Plus, they have this pick. They love the deadline. They didn't necessarily love the LA trade, but the net, what they got in return on deadline day last year, was impressive when they weren't really giving up a whole hell of a lot. And I still think, even with how poorly it worked out, I still think that that was good value to get in return. But then, like, just every move they've made has been praised at the time, and then with the benefit of hindsight, he's gone ripped for it. I think he did really well with the Kyle Korver trade. He's done well with his George Hill trade. And the Colin Sexton pick looks pretty damn good. I mean, I've been someone that's questioned it, but I'm not exactly going to root for Colin Sexton to fail just because I didn't like the pick on draft night. I mean, I didn't love the Kyrie pick on draft night, and he ended up being one of my favorite players ever. And I've routinely been stupid and been wrong, so I'm not afraid of being wrong in the future.
Yeah, and it's been a lot one of those results over process where I don't know who else I would have picked. I didn't like it at the time, but that one's, you know, turned out okay. But in the trades, I think if you went back and looked at those, like even the Kyrie trade, I don't know what else they were going to get that was going to be much better. You know,
no.
When you hear Zach Lowe and some of those guys talk about the other deals that were out there, it doesn't sound like there was much. And also, no,
I remember
Sexton pick.
I remember we were told, like, because I'm petty, so I'm going to remember everything people say. But I remember when news broke that the Suns were offering Bledsoe and Dragan Bender. And, like, guys like Snoddy, for example, were saying, I don't know if the Cavs can do better than that for Kyrie. And, like, could you imagine how bad that would have been?
Oh, it would have been awful. And if we're being honest, like, Jay Crowder should have been a perfect fit on that Cavs team and should have helped match up against Golden State. And that Nets pick should have been Luka Doncic or somebody really good, or Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, it all worked out as poorly as it possibly could. But if you looked at what the expected outcomes were of that, this should have been really good.
Yeah, and in all fairness, as much as I love LeBron, he does take some of the blame, because I mean, you hear the stories of just the lengths he went to make Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas feel uncomfortable and unwelcome, throwing that game against Brooklyn to prove a point about the pick, which would have given them the same odds as Sacramento. It doesn't necessarily mean they would have jumped up to two, but they could have had a higher pick than they did. Planning the wine trip so that Isaiah Thomas couldn't practice with the team, making Jay Crowder feel uncomfortable, like that didn't necessarily help. So Kobe was kind of being sabotaged from the inside there. And
LeBron's ability to control a narrative is, and to control, you know, everything, is just incredible. Like, didn't he have some quote this week about how he wanted the Cavs to trade Kyrie for Dame Lillard out of Portland? Like, what?
Yeah, that's been aggregated a few times recently. Yeah, so it was. Yeah, he wanted the Cavs to trade Kyrie for Lillard, but he also didn't want the Cavs to trade Kyrie, and he always wanted Kyrie to stay. It gets hard to keep track of.
Why would Portland have ever done that? Like, he just threw out a name. I don't. It's just.
Well, you know what that is, right? Like, that's back channeling to get Dame to ask for a trade in LA.
Oh yeah, I'm surprised there hasn't been more about that.
I mean, I think that's happening this summer, that Dame is going to get traded to LA. That's just my personal opinion.
Speaking of being really petty, which you and I clearly are, I haven't been able to enjoy LA much this year.
I mean, the West right now is at a point where one good week will get you into first place in the West and one bad week will get you to 12. So they have had a weak schedule. The Tyson Chandler trade has helped them a lot. I think Rajon Rondo being hurt has helped them a lot. I mean, it's going to be interesting. Don't forget, at this time of the year, the Cavs were basically going on an 18-2 run. They had won 13 games in a row. Like, that seems like years ago, but that happened last year. The LeBron experience every year becomes about 4 years off the life. And right now, he's playing out of his mind, but I don't think he wants to keep playing at this level for long, and someone's going to have to step up when he starts taking a step back.
Oh yeah, and they don't have. I know that they want Rondo and Stevenson and all those guys to do it, but yeah, those the Ingram LeBron pairing doesn't seem to be working very well, and I don't trust anybody else to be able to do it at a high level. So, but you still just want to enjoy it. So I'm hoping that that downturn. And I don't even like dislike LeBron. This isn't like a mad at LeBron thing. I think I'm just mad at the narratives of like Magic closing the deal over dinner and all these genius moves they made to make a roster that looks like so much like what the Cavs were doing. It drives me nuts.
Yeah, that's a very important point. Like I do not have ill will towards LeBron. Like I do think him moving to LA was probably best for both sides. And it's the cost of doing business. I mean, this is not unique to him. This is almost every superstar is taxing in some way. I just, like you, I think it's hilarious that, oh yeah, Magic closed the deal. It's the same thing as the Pat Riley thing. Like, I know we want to talk about him putting his dick and rings on the table, but that was something that Bosch, Wade, and LeBron had planned out years before with Team USA, and that was the one team that had scrapped everything to make it happen. They wanted to play with their friends. They didn't want to play for Pat Riley. It's just funny to me that we kind of create these narratives in hindsight, but it's LeBron. I mean, he controls so much of the league, and it can be frustrating at times, but it's part of what makes him so great.
Oh yeah, but it's hilarious that we know this much about LeBron now, and Riley still gets any credit at all for that, because it's so clear it was those guys doing it. But the fact that, you know, Riley put the rings on the table and Magic's closing over dinner, like, LeBron had those decisions made way before that. So giving those guys credit, whereas he like came and saved the Cavaliers, which he did, but he did the same thing for those other organizations too. So it's hysterical listening to it.
Oh, also, if we're talking about being petty and hindsight narratives, people are still mocking the Cavs for trading with LA last summer and giving them two max spots because they thought the two max spots were necessary to land LeBron. Obviously, he was fine going there with nobody. So I don't think that second spot that the Cavs gave him actually mattered, because they didn't land Paul George. They didn't trade for Kawhi Leonard. And it obviously wasn't that important. I think they could have pretty easily created that space other ways.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that LeBron was going the whole time and that the Cavs kind of knew it. I mean, just the way everyone acted about that entire situation, yeah. Which still makes me angry that he threw the Nets game, just because what did he care at that point? Do you think AD signing Rich Paul going with Clutch is a sign that he's also on his way there?
No, I think it's a sign that he's out of New Orleans. I don't think that it necessarily means he's going to go to LA. I mean, Rich Paul is going to get guys to whatever situation they think is best. He's going to get them paid. I mean, John Wall signed a big contract. There's tons of stars that LeBron is basically representing through his shadow company here in Clutch. I don't
even have a GM on the Suns now. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, I mean, that's the other thing. We can't mock him too much because he is going to own the Cavs in a couple of years, and James Jones is going to be our general manager. So it's hard to get too invested in Kobe Altman, and it's hard to get too mad at LeBron. He went to L.A. to raise that movie money so he could buy the team from Dan Gilbert. I mean,
he's going to be such a bad owner. It's going to be amazing.
We're going from one meddling owner to possibly the most meddling owner of all time.
Like, think about LeBron's leadership style and like the chaos that just surrounds him at all times. Now imagine that from a guy who's like the GM. Oh, it's going to be amazing. It's going to make this look like nothing.
I want, as much as I love these jokes, I do have to give him credit. He seems to hire good people and let them kind of do their thing in every other aspect of life. So maybe that's his way as an owner. Maybe he's all cheap. Like, we know that he doesn't even pay for a data plan. Maybe he's going to be the cheapest owner of all time.
If he just bought the team and let one of his friends run it, that'd be amazing. Like, can Rich Paul be our GM? Can we do that?
No, it's going to be James Jones. You know it's going to be James Jones.
Well, that's true. That's true. It'll still be amazing.
it really would be. I mean, man, we got sidetracked. But to answer your question, Kobe Altman, I give him the benefit of the doubt. I think ultimately he's made some pretty good moves given the circumstances. My biggest concern has always been, is he actually in possession of that job, or is it just Dan Gilbert kind of using him as a shield for whatever moves he wants to do? But I mean, we've seen in the past, especially with the Cavs losing, I think Dan Gilmore starts caring a little bit less. He'll cut the checks, but I think he becomes less and less involved in day-to-day operations when this is a rebuilding situation.
Yeah, I think we likely see the real Kobe in the smaller moves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like deadline day last year was probably a lot of Kobe Altman, and these trades right now to move money around for assets, these are probably Kobe Altman. When you're talking the Kyrie deal, or even probably the Sexton pick, I'm guessing that's where Gilbert steps in some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we know Dan Gilbert likes short players that can't really shoot. So I think Colin Sexton picked him and can actually shoot, because otherwise we'd have another Kay Felder, Isaiah Thomas situation.
Oh, forgot about Kay Felder.
Oh, yeah. Kay Felder is a little problematic now. You saw that, right?
No.
Yeah, he got arrested for domestic violence. He was with the 905.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's the type of bright note I wanted to end this podcast on. Man, oh man. Well, do you have any parting thoughts, anything that we should hit on before we wrap this up?
No, I think we've covered pretty much the whole league and Kay Felder's arrest record, so I think we've got everything I had on my notes here.
All right, Jeff, well, thank you so much for coming on. Really do appreciate it. Hopefully we'll be able to get Carter out of bed and recording on Wednesday. Thanks to all of our listeners as well for putting up with us. I know we missed the podcast on Wednesday, need to take a little bit of a break. Fortunately, when you got goofy parts in your head like myself, sometimes you need a day off. So we will be back in the normal recording schedule. So in terms of parting thoughts, don't be like Kay Felder. Remember to always be annoying. You have free license now that the Cavs suck. You're invincible now, Cavs fans, so enjoy it. All right, so thanks again, Jeff. Thanks to our listeners. Until next time, go Cavs.